we do not have state-supported facilities, and we have a dictated ratio that requires us to have fewer children per teacher. So that's one of the reasons I would really like you to support the child care grant funds as much as possible. I also think as you do that, that it's important to recognize that child care has become a highly regulated industry by the state of Alaska in an effort to support the safety and health of young children, and I recognize that as a state function. But when those regulations come without funding and they impact the basic economic factors, I think the state needs to evaluate that. One basic factor that's regulated is the teacher-to-child ratio. Another is the amount of square feet we must have per child in each of our buildings. And a more recent one is the amount of education and training for administrators and teachers in the program. Another reason that's important to support the child care grant portion of this budget is that this money comes back into the economy in a very positive way. It stays local. Most child care workers are still operating on very, very low salaries. I'm sure most of you have heard of the quote of $4.41 an hour. We've tossed that one out many times, and I know many of you are aware of that. When you translate that into a monthly figure of $800 a month, or a yearly figure of under $10,000 a year, I think you begin to get the impact of how much money, or how little money, child care workers are earning. When they get any extra funds through the child care grant money that comes back for salary, that money goes right back into the economy in the form of rent and food. That money is not going to Hawaii, so it is a way of supporting the economy. My third major point of my three is I would like to see you reinstate the education and training money. I know that came out of the governor's revised budget, and I know it is not in the House money, but I would really urge you to look at that. It's only $100,000. It goes all the way across the state, and now we are being required to have 10 hours of training for each of our caregivers, and they are all required to have CPR and first aid. This money is a method of achieving that goal. This is another area where the state has regulated the training and is now cutting funding. I think it's very important that that money be reinstated. I can give you a specific of how that money has worked in Fairbanks. For the fiscal year of 1985, we were funded through the Fairbanks Association for the Education of Young Children for a conference, an early childhood conference for 2 days. We received $4,599 for 100 people to attend. The actual cost of the conference in outright dollars was $17,000. We received another $9,600 in donated goods and services. Actually, 236 people attended. I think you can tell from those figures that this little seed money of $4,600 turned into a very big project, not counting the hotel costs, the food money, the travel money of the people who came to Fairbanks for this. So this is one more method of supporting the economy in this day of very depressed figures and people not working. I think any money you can put in for supporting this is good. The fact that this child care money not only is good for children, but turns around and benefits our whole community economically should give you double reason for increasing this. Also, our workshops up here have been attended by hundreds of people from a cross-section of all the child care centers in the community. So I think it's the kind of fund that you really cannot afford to cut out of this budget. $100,000 is, even in this day and age, not much for our state budget for young children. I guess my concluding statement is that I would urge you to support this program to the fullest, not only the daycare assistance portion for parents, but the child care grant portion direct subsidy to centers. I'm very afraid that if money doesn't go into this program now, we'll wind up paying for it later in the form of remedial education, corrections, and mental health. That's the primary part of my testimony. I do have one question, if it's possible for anyone to answer that. I understand that the Senate budget in this portion is calling, the proposed budget is calling for a $400,000 cut, which would be reducing the 10% administrative money for municipalities to 5% as tied to SB 482. If SB 482 does not pass, where will the $400,000 come from, or will the cut not be made? I have questions about that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Anyone on the committee care to address that?
No, just hold a minute.
Just a moment, we're looking it up now. Are there any other questions by the committee?
I've got it right here, John, if that's
go ahead.
Push and switch in.
What do you want to know? She wants to know whether or not it was contingent upon passage of another bill.
No, it's not.
Did you want to know if it was contingent upon passage of another bill?
Yes, I want to know about the $400,000. I'm wondering if that money will come out of daycare assistance money or child care grant money if SB 42 doesn't pass.
Since that's an allocation, it could probably come out of both of them. I guess mostly some of us were just looking at child care as a program as to whether or not the state should be involved in that. Maybe parents should take care of their own children. John Sackett, who asked that question, and I still feel the way I do.
Thank you for your input, Senator Fisher.
Just something, at least of interest to me, the present speaker had indicated about how state regulations, by increasing the size of square footage per child or whatever, will increase a drain on the state treasury, with the feeling that if the state puts a regulation into effect, the state should pay for that regulation. And we're down here also wrestling with the regulations on industries, such as the miners, where the state puts a regulation on, but there are no state dollars to help out those industries.
Senator Katula?
We're finding here is there's not the state dollars to support the child care costs, and yet it's basic economic factors. The main factor is not the square foot per child, but the child-to-teacher ratio, where we're required to have one teacher for infants, for five infants, one teacher for 10 preschoolers, one teacher for six toddlers, and if that out, one teacher for 10 preschoolers, one teacher for 15 kindergartners, one teacher for 20 school-age children. And yet when the state does education, half as many hours per day, because it is state-funded, they do not require the same standards. And yet they're asking the private sector to do more than they're doing in public schools without the funding.
Good point. Senator Lyason?
Senator Petula, go ahead.
This is one of the, of course, most substantially direct subsidized areas. We're putting in close to $10 million into this area, child care, in this one line. There are other areas throughout the government, a budget that does provide for other resource assistance to child facilities. But child care, we did not want to cut the subsidy program, that's the daycare program. But in order to meet some level of budget responsibility, we went throughout the budgets, and in this category, we reduced only the administrative cost there, and that was, instead of 10% allowable, we reduced to 5%, so we didn't have to cut the subsidy. So the direct funding for the children is in, was the administrative overhead. We've done that pretty much throughout government. We've been reducing at least administrative assistant level people, PR people, press people, and so on, throughout government. So it's not inconsistent, nor are you being singled out when we take it out of the administrative program rather than the direct funding to support the individuals there. I just want you to know that.
Monitor.
Yes, we'll take an additional person in Fairbanks at this time.
If I might say that we'll take one more witness and then we'll take a 15-minute break.
Yes, my name is Cheryl Clark in Fairbanks, and I am a mother of three, a longtime Alaska resident. I'm also a member of Lobby for Alaska's Children, Fairbanks Association for the Education of Young Children, and the operator of one of the largest child care facilities here in Fairbanks. And as far as the equality of making a 10% cut to child care programs go, we would like to reiterate that there is a division between the daycare system subsidy and the child care grant program money. The daycare assistance is not a subsidy to child care centers or to child care programs. It is a direct subsidy to working or people being trained, specifically low-income or single parent families. This does not go into the child care program at all. Those parents are paying the same, or the DCA program is paying the same fee to the child care center as a private paying parent would be paying, and therefore cannot be considered a subsidy to a child care program. The current economic situation with child care centers and probably child care homes and the programs for children is desperate at the moment. I'd like you to please understand that. My center is a private center run by my husband and myself, and we have found in the last few months we've been having to cut salaries and benefits for our staff. We've had to cut back on the types of food service we're able to provide, and these cuts are having an impact on the children in our program. The type of people we're able to hire are not as qualified as what we were able to at higher salaries before we started making cuts. We cannot expect people making an average of $4.41 an hour to be qualified to care for young children under the age of 5. I don't think we could expect people making that salary to be qualified as public school teachers either. Yet, the people caring for the young children under 5 have a higher level of responsibility, in my opinion. Therefore, I want to come out in support of increased funding for young children in early childhood programs and child care settings, not decreased. We have recognized that the average in the Fairbanks area is $435 per child per month for the school district. The average right now about for child care programs is $330 a month, yet we have about three times the adult ratios, which means we're paying three people for the same job that the school district is paying one person because of our higher ratios, yet it's about one-third less monthly rate there. Okay, summary here, I'd just like to say that our child care programs cannot survive at the quality they are with the current economic factors unless we get relief. And that cannot come about with any cuts happening in this sort of program. We need more money, not less. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Fisher.
I just have a question. It's never been addressed yet, but I'd like to just get your reaction to it. The direct subsidy that goes either for the child or the mother who wants to put her child in a daycare center, what would your feeling be if the mother decided, in the same economic category, decided she'd like to stay home and be a full-time housewife? Would you object to that money going to her to allow her to stay home?
I think that it's just wonderful when a mother would like to stay home with her child. I don't think I'm really qualified to answer if that money should go to her in her home or not.
Thank you very much. Before we take a break, I would like to note that Representative Ewing has been present most of the day. I don't think he was recognized here
later part of
a while ago. And Representative Boucher would like to testify before the committee. Representative Boucher has been here continuously listening to the testimony, so I'll turn it over to Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I've been here throughout the day. My name is H.A. Red Boucher. I'm a representative from District 10A in Midtown Anchorage. I'm also a former lieutenant governor who participated in budget processes during the Egan administration when the only available printout was those that were located in Bill Ray's grocery bag, but I see printouts here that are available for everybody to read. You know, that's why he became the master of the budget, because he had all he got to whoever copied the machine. We ran them off on hand crank machines. Now I've never seen so much information. In fact, I thought I knew something about the budget process, but since I have been down here this time and participated in it, I would say that one would have to spend considerable time reading and understanding of the process, because it is a complex one. But the thing I think that I've listened today, and we have had other testimony. I'm a great believer in telecommunications. In fact, I chair the House Special Committee on Telecommunications, and I think using technology like this truly brings people together, and we sincerely ought to really look at our budget, and I don't know how that area is affected, but I think it's good for both the people and the legislative body. But in listening today, I've heard pretty much the same thing that I've gotten. In fact, I don't think there was a particular subject that was totally different than the public hearings that I have been attending in other areas in the budget process, both within this body and the body that I'm a part of. But, and I'm going to say this as one who has seen government in the state of Alaska for some time, I felt this year, I'm a freshman, although I've been here before, and I felt that the budgeting process, whether we, a caucus is a proper framework to do it or not, but I felt that as a freshman, that there was a tremendous effort within the House side to inform me. And the senator from my district and her staff, that is Senator Fakes, the senator from my district that's present today. I think the other one's probably out talking about closed meetings. But the senator from my district has always been very open and upfront and quite patient when I said, well, what does this or that line item mean? And what I said a moment ago was with purpose. I usually say what I've got to say, but I'm absolutely appalled that after all of the flap and affidavits that have been signed by various legislators over the past week or so, that I don't see a single one of them in this room. They're probably running around making statements, and while that may pick them up a few votes in the long run, I think as we go through these particular critical times in the state, we have to recognize that the system which was founded by Senator Jack Coghill is sitting over here and others, there is a checks and balance. The more experienced body within the Senate putting its budget together and the House putting its budget together and the executive. I think this is part of the built-in checks and balances within the system. And I think we ought to really take a look at it. That does not mean, and I have said this to Howard Weaver when he was here, that we can become so involved in the process that occasionally we need to be hit over the head. And I think that is kind of welcome when the media does it. But I happen to think that most of this has been inspired internally by a few people that wanted to grab a few headlines. And I think that the voter out there ought to really take a look at it, because I think the system is far more important than any individual, as a person who has served here for quite a number of years, formerly with the governor. And I think when you hurt the system, You hurt not only the process and tear down just another stone of belief of people in their government. And I think that we ought to take a bigger look, because no matter who sits as chairman or co-chairman of the various committees, the state of Alaska will survive. But I think that in these periods of times, Mr. Chairman, that we can do a lot better in the way we conduct our business. And I want to thank you for the opportunity of being able to participate and listen in today. It's been very informative, and I want to thank you for taking the time, even though I know that all these computer printouts are got to be put together in reality. You've got to get together with the House and the Governor within a period of 10 days, a period of time, and I wish you luck on it, and anything that in my small way that I can do to contribute or to help accelerate that process for the public good, I'll be glad to.
Thank you, Representative Boucher. I'm sure the committee appreciates your candid remarks on this particular issue. We also have Representative Ewing, who would like to address the committee. Thank you.
I'd like to comment on
sure.
Senator Katula, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
I just want to say, Governor Boucher, that we're always honored by your input. We appreciate you being here.
Yes, thanks very much.
Senator Ferguson?
I'd like to associate myself with the comments made by Representative Boucher. I believe he's a true spokesman for the people in Alaska, and he doesn't have any axe to grind.
Thank you very much. Representative Ealing?
Yes, thank you, Senator Elias. And just a brief few comments. I've kind of been in and out during the hearings today, but I did want to take the opportunity of thanking the Senate Finance Committee for all the work that they've done today and listening to people, and for the people out there that are putting their input in into the process. And I think that's very important, and I just wanted to say thank you all. I think all the people that I've heard spoken, including Representative Boucher and the senators here, are indicative of the hardworking kind of people that we do have down here that are trying to listen to people. Thanks.
Thank you. Senator Sackett, I'll turn the meeting back to you.
How many more people do we have? Okay, that's... Let's make it short. 15. Make it short. 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Why don't we make between 5, about 10 minutes. Take 10 minutes. Back.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. What other gradient to Seward?
I'm
Prior to that, he would. Okay, thank you. We will go to take an anchorage now. We go to Fairbanks.
Somebody
I guess my concern is one point of the process we're going through. Okay, thank you. Next witness, please. Thank you.
earmarked
And I wondered what's happened to the rest of the money and where is it going and when will it be utilized for health promotion?
Kay, I don't think we have the number available, but what you can do is you can either give one of us a call or something so we have some time to work on it. If that would be okay with you, just give us a call here in Juneau. Over.
Oh, thank you. Who do I call?
You can call me, Senator Paul Fisher, or anybody here on the Finance Committee, or probably any legislator could get the information for you.
Oh, thank you so much. Because here again, this low birth weight relates to your teen. It relates to the woman in this category who is having difficulty getting prenatal care, and we really need to help these clients into proper care. The other question I had was, I understand the dividend check business, but what I'm wondering is, I thought that in order to receive that, you just had to live in Alaska for 4 months. Is that correct?
Six.
To be eligible to receive the dividend check?
No, it's 6 months.
Oh, 6 months. Well, not too far. What I would recommend, I agree with the woman in Fairbanks. I think that's a waste of our money, frankly, because by the time you get it, Jeff, you have it back. But what I'd like to see it earmarked for human and health and human services. I really feel that the citizens of this state would get a lot more mileage out of it than a lot of us who get it that don't need it. Thank you.
6 month recipient should get a plane ticket. One way back.
Okay, thank you, Kay. We'll stay in Anchorage. Gordon Glazer.
Thank you, Senator, and other members of the Finance Committee. My name is Gordon Glazer. I live at 1201 Denali, Anchorage, probation officer. I'm here basically to testify in reference to the Senate's proposed reduction in the consumer protection budget of approximately 50%. Speaking from personal experience, I had a problem with an Anchorage travel agency in terms of getting refunding on airline tickets. I wasn't able to do it. I finally went to consumer protection. They were able to help me. I did a little checking on it, and it seemed like there were several hundred other consumers who had the same problem. I can't think of any other place I could have gone to except small claims court in terms of having some sort of spokesman to help me in terms of dealing with that travel agency. I also, checking on it, is that that travel agency was finally was involved with an action in terms of consumer protection about having a change in their practice. I don't know anybody else who would have been involved in changing them on their practice.
Get your retirement match.
I get a little concerned when I figure out they have about 15 people statewide, and cutting them by half basically got most of the programs throughout the state. They're the white collar consumer for all us, they're a source of education. And I think they provide a vital service. I'm now president of my local condo association, and the new Uniform Common Interest Ownership Act is a really good bill. I think it really helped. I know it helped our condo in particular and helped many others. I know they were involved in testifying for that, and they've been a good source of information for us to understand some of the ins and outs. It's a pretty thick bill. I can't think of it. I just want to reiterate, I can't think of any agency that provides that role in the Department of Law. And in comparison with other states, I can't think of any other state that doesn't have anything like that, except maybe Mississippi or something like that. I think it benefits both the honest legitimate business or the honest legitimate condo association and helps control basically the sheep from the goat. I want to thank you for their time, and I hope you'll consider refunding them to what they basically deserve and what we deserve. Thank you.
Senator Halford, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gordon, just so you understand it, the Senate did not propose the reduction in the consumer protection budget. That budget reduction was proposed by the governor. It was initially resisted by the Senate. Then it came out in the governor's revised budget, and we did, at least tentatively to this point, agree to accept it. But that was not a Senate-proposed reduction. That came from the Department of Law. It was proposed in the governor's revised budget.
All I can say is that was a fault of the Senate Intelligence as opposed to, I think, an error of the government staff. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Gordon. Carolyn Morris.
Thank you. My name is Carolyn Morris, and I'm currently serving as the chapter chairperson for the Alaska Public Employees Association General Government Unit here in the city of Anchorage. We have nearly 3,000 members, and of course, we all know about the famous 3.8% cost of living increase that we are not going to get, we assume. However, when the governor came out with section number 22 of and Senate substitute for House Bill 500, which would eliminate use of any funds in that budget for pay increases or merit increases, we of course were alarmed. The merit system is the one thing that employees who have proven continuous greater worth to state service look forward to in their evaluations. And it's a very small amount for most people, but for a lot of people in the lower pay ranges, it can mean a great deal. And we're talking about a lot of clerical workers who are single parents and are taking care of children and are trying to work. And I think that this slam to the merit system is something that you should pay close attention to, and we urge you to delete section number 22.
Thank you, Carolyn. I have a question. Earlier there was testimony given that apparently there's some kind of a feeling out there that in order not to lay off any state employees ought to consider, and I think the proposal was something like 15% cut in salary, those making over $50,000, and 10 between 30 and 50 or something to that order. Has your organization at all talked about taking a wage cut in order to keep everybody working that's now working? Over.
At this point in time, that has not been discussed as far as I know. We will be going to General Assembly in May, and if it were permissible or if it were possible, I would urge that you would put that in some form of a letter and send it to our Executive Director, Sherry Shelley, because I'm sure it would be spoken of on the floor. We, as public employees, know that we have been earning a nice salary and we have wonderful benefits, and I don't think there's any of us who do not appreciate that. Compared with other states, we are still number one. However, we are not that far behind Colorado. I think we only average about $2,000 a year more than the average public employee in Colorado. And of course, we know that their cost of living is much less. However, as public employees and as persons who deliver the services out there on the front line to the public, we are very interested in efficient state government. We would like to see services stay at a level where we can actually serve people. They don't have to stand in line for hours and hours at a time. And I'm sure that if that were presented in a proper form to the executive director, that it certainly would be considered and would be discussed.
Thank you, Carolyn. Next will be Larry.
Thank you, Senator Fisher and members of the Senate Finance. I want to speak in support of the Ombudsman's Office. I have been a public administrator for 15 years. I have enjoyed working with the Ombudsman's Office and look forward to the time when there have been reviews of our procedures on behalf of the people that we serve. I would also like to speak in support of a state income tax. Thank you.
I'd like to ask a question.
Go ahead.
I think a state income tax is probably something that will be considered in the not too distant future. What I have a question on is, at what range would you be supporting a state income tax? At the range that was supported previous to its withdrawal or deletion, or X percentage of the federal tax?
And perhaps higher.
I was thinking of a possibility to make it very, very simple. Now, you understand it always hurts, but to make it very simple, it might be at a percentage of the federal tax. The federal tax is not fair, but it's a simple one to come to, like a 10% across the board of the federal tax. You just file that and send it into the state, or a percentage of the federal tax less your local government taxes, which would also be simple. They could be tax credits, but it would still yield a tremendous amount for the support of our educational health institutions and so on. Have you thought about at all about the possibilities of how you would want an income tax if and when it's enacted?
Senator Katula, I support what you just said.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. We'll stay in Anchorage. Carol McConnell.
Thank you for your all-day session and being patient with listening to all of us. I'm Carol McConnell, Maternal Child Health Coordinator at the Municipality of Anchorage. I work with the Department of Health and Services. I'm also the co-chairman. Should I start again? Okay. I'm Carol McConnell. I'm the Maternal Child Health Coordinator with the Municipality of Anchorage, Department of Health and Human Services. I'm also the co-chairperson for the Alaska Task Force for the Prevention of Low Birth Weight. Therefore, my interest lies in issues which are directed to women and teenagers and infants. Presently, the small staff of about 10 community health nurses in Anchorage is trying to provide preventive health services at clinics and in the homes of families with women, teenagers, and their children. At this present staff level, gaps exist in providing programs for this population. A further cut in the community health grant would widen that gap further. Healthy pregnant women and teenagers, mothers and their children are essential to our state. Cutting back, resulting in eliminating services which provide support, and many of our mothers are here without that support, education, preventive health education, and preventive health services in the long run will only cost the state more money in the future. It's time we look at preventive health services not as a luxury, but an essential to our social and economic future. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Senator Halford?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just with regard to the Anchorage Health and Social Service questions, the Senate budget proposal at this point is higher in both direct programs and in block grant than any other current proposal. It's higher than the governor's revised, and it's higher than the House. Just so people know that out there.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Sackett, Mr. Chairman, I believe that takes care of all the first round. You may want to take over the teleconference. There's a Jeff Bowman that wants to address the body the second time.
Senator Sackett, can I make one comment before we go?
Certainly.
There was some reference made to income tax. I'd just like to make it clear that the information we have here in Juneau that an income tax in place would, based upon the same percentages that was repealed here a few years ago, would bring in $330 million. So if we are laboring under the impression that an income tax is going to solve our financial dilemma, it's not going to happen. As was testified this morning, the guesstimates of many of the people in the Finance Committee that if the same budget was submitted next year that we have before us now, we will have a $400 million deficit. So if we would put an income tax in place, we would still have a $70 million deficit. So the point being that an income tax is not going to solve our financial dilemma.
This concludes the public hearing. It's been an extremely long day. I'd like to thank each of the people that testified and also the members of the Finance Committee. We'll get together tomorrow. I'll call the meeting to order at 1 p.m. To consider the proposed budgets before us and all amendments you might have. Meeting is adjourned.